stands for Lose to the Human Spirit.
We are fighting down the bottom with a bottom group of players.
That's an extremely naive statement.
I didn't know any of that.
The arm socket tube's far too big for me.
Holding the high line with Rabbi in red. Talking the rabbits and turning heads. With questions from you and analysis. In your car, in your home. Thank you for tuning to Holding the High Line.
Hello, Colorado Rapids fans and people from Austin who love Schadenfreude. This is Holding the High Line with Rabbi in Red. We are brought to you by Icarus FC and Roughneck Scarves. My name is Matt Pollard. It is Monday, April 26th, 2021. The CONCACAF Champions League quarterfinals are upon us. Tottenham Hotspur has failed to win a trophy via the new manager bump, and the Colorado Rapids have their first loss of 2021 in a way that was all too familiar. I'm joined now by a man who reluctantly has agreed to talk to me about the Vancouver Whitecaps tonight, Rabbi Mark Goodman.
Yeah, Matt, it's, we talked about this last year, and I want to remind our listeners who may not remember what happened when we discussed the Vancouver Whitecaps last year. We had a really great interview all set to go with a journalist from the Vancouver newspaper. We were all excited about the game, even though Vancouver is not really that fun a team to play because they're not typically very good. And then, Matt, what happened?
The world ended because COVID-19, we thought it was going to be okay, and we were super ignorant, even though everybody in Italy was telling us that it's coming. And so in the spirit of that, folks, we will not be doing an episode of Know Thy Enemy, because maybe secretly, Mark, the soccer gods were like, oh, this guy Mark and Matt, they talked about the Vancouver Whitecaps with a guy from Vancouver. We have to punish the world now. I hope that's not the case, but we're believers in karma, and we are not poking the karma gods tonight.
I'll say it almost the same way, but slightly differently, which is, like, I don't really believe in all that stuff. I don't believe in bad luck. I don't believe in superstition. But I'll tell you this, Matt. When I was in high school, I was in 12th grade, and I ran cross-country and track, and I ran down Ventura Boulevard at my regular workout with the other guys, and some dude was painting the front of his store, and he had a ladder up, and the ladder straddled the entire sidewalk. And rather than go around the ladder and run onto the street, I just went onto the ladder because, hey, man, I don't believe in superstition and all that stuff is stupid, right? And like a week after I ran onto the ladder, I got chicken pox and it ruined the rest of my senior year of high school. So you know what I don't do anymore, Matt? I don't run under ladders, and I sure as hell am not going to talk about the Vancouver Whitecaps with a reporter from another city the week, a year after we kicked off a pandemic, talking to a reporter from the Vancouver Whitecaps.
Well, listeners, we've got a great show for you tonight. Mark, for our main banter topic, as I mentioned earlier, Champions League is back. Five of the eight teams in the quarterfinals are from Major League Soccer. We do have one MLS versus MLS matchup, and the other three are MLS versus Liga MX. So, Mark, it's Atlanta versus Philly, and then Toronto versus Cruz Azul tomorrow at time of recording. Fittingly, Mark, Toronto FC will be playing at Raymond James Stadium, home of the Super Bowl champion Tampa Bay Buccaneers, so a little bit of theme there with Michael Bradley's quote about keeping that knife between your teeth. So there's a part of me that doesn't want this to be a soccer game so much as like a pirate, like, rollicking bar fight with Michael Bradley showing up dressed up as Captain Jack Sparrow. Unfortunately, my dream for that will not come true, like most of my dreams don't come true. And then on Wednesday, probably the most one-sided of the MLS versus Liga MX matchups in Columbus Crew playing a depleted and on poor form Monterey side, and then Portland with an interesting and very CONCACAF-y matchup against Club America. Mark, what do we think? You know, it was all roses because of the results that we had in the first round. Now we're actually having some proper matchups against some really good Liga MX teams. For sure, one MLS team is going home because we've got an MLS versus MLS matchup. And this is usually the start of the round where the inevitability of MLS not winning this competition starts to become realized.
Yeah, I mean, you said that glass is half empty. I mean, let's think of a glass as half full. One team is going on to the CONCACAF semifinals, either Atlanta or Philly. That's a fantastic matchup. You know, Atlanta's been a little disappointing to start the year. Joseph Martinez hasn't really clicked with goals or anything like that, and so I think that that's a bit of a worry. Philadelphia looks like they haven't taken their foot off the gas from last year. So I think Philly's the favorite to go through there. Maybe not in the first leg, considering the first leg's in Philly, yeah?
The first leg is in Atlanta. All of the other MLS teams are home for the first leg, so then three games in Mexico and then the one game up in Chester, PA in the second leg.
Yeah, the MLS app says it like this. It says leg one, and it has Atlanta on the left side, but it doesn't say where. Which is fine, I should know that, but my brain got kerfuzzed because on the second line it says leg two scheduled for 5:04 in Chester. So, anyways, point being, Toronto Cruz Azul is gonna be really tough. I mean, we talked about it 2 weeks ago. You know, Toronto's second leg was really much better than their first, but they looked lousy in their first leg, and Cruz Azul is arguably the best team in all of the Americas right now. They were absolutely fantastic to end the Clausura last year. So they're very, very they're the odds-on favorite to win the whole thing. So Toronto getting a result is unlikely. I think Columbus has a really good chance against Monterrey, and that would be a fantastic result for them in both legs, I mean. So, you know, what they need to do is come out and pound the ever-loving snot out of them in the first leg because, you know, going away to Mexico is always really a challenge. I don't rate Portland versus Club America. America's not at the heights of where it was a couple years ago in 2017 when they played Toronto, and they were just loaded for bear. I mean, they were just a fantastic, remarkably good team. They were deep at every position. They were so talented. They're not quite as ridiculous. I've only watched two games this year and a couple at the end of last year, so I can't claim to be an expert. But, you know, they pretty much pound all the other Liga MX teams. So, you know, my guess would be we're looking at – I'm going to go way out on a limb, Matt. We're looking at a Columbus Crew and Cruz Azul final. What do you think?
I won't make a prediction on the final. I've been pretty steadfast. I think the semifinals, I've said this on this show, I've said this on Last Word, and I've written it for the CCL preview for Last Word on soccer. I think both semifinals will be MLS versus Liga MX, and I reserve the right depending on – I think it'll be Columbus Crew versus a Mexican team in the – final itself, but I think it'll just be two MLS teams advancing to the semifinals, and I until I am proven otherwise, you know, Columbus could win the first leg of the final 3-0, and I will still be here. Like, I will believe it when I see it that an MLS team wins Champions League this season. Mark, this past Saturday at Dick's Sporting Goods Park, for the first time in over 13 months, the Colorado Rapids played a home game in front of actual fans. And unfortunately for the Burgundy Boys, it was a 3-1 loss to Verde. The Rapids come out in the first half and they are absolutely buzzing. Mark, in our pre-game presser that we had earlier in the week with Robin Fraser, he talked about the team being really strong in the ball, being good at possession and setting up pressure traps and then finding space and doing something with that space. Andre Shinyashiki did a really good job of that. Kellen Acosta, who was again at left back with Lalas Abubakar and Sam Vines, ultimately unavailable, did that as well. And then also Michael Barrios, who was the get in behind and then create stuff. He is, in those opening 45 minutes, Mark, he was everything that the Rapids build him to be in terms of finding and exploiting space with his speed in the ways that we wanted Marlon Hairston to do. And kind of similarly to Marlon Hairston, lacking in the finishing and then lacking in the link-up play with his teammates once they actually get involved in the play. A couple decent opportunities for Andre Shinyashiki and Diego Rubio. Frustrating night for the Chilean international, if you ask me, Mark. And then it was the Colorado Rapids going ahead on 36 minutes in the form of Andre Shinyashiki, him with a really good header on an outswinging corner from Jack Price. So the Set Piece Kings proceed to be very good on set pieces, though we do, Mark, have some catching up to do, as earlier in the day, New York City FC put a 5-spot up on FC Cincinnati, all 5 goals coming on set pieces. Fortunately for the Rapids, they play FC Cincinnati later on in the season. Then it was halftime, Mark, and you figured, okay, the Rapids keep doing what they're doing. Eventually, 65th, maybe 70th minute, Austin FC is absolutely going to hit a wall, bring on Jonathan Lewis, just get another second goal, and then clamp them down defensively. And then probably with a few decent hacks on Cecilio Dominguez, and the Rapids will be good. It should be pointed out, folks, Ben Sweat, the outside back for Austin, came out of this game with an injury. And Mark, we had talked a lot about that left side for Verde with Dominguez and then also with Pochettino. Tomas Pochettino was removed from this game from the lineup. Austin FC tweeting out that there was, with the league, potentially some concerns about the paperwork and his actual eligibility and everything. Didn't give a whole lot of details. Didn't really matter from the purpose of that standpoint. He was unavailable for this game. And Mark, ultimately, Austin didn't really need him. They forewent them actually playing out of the back through Alexander Ring. They continued to let the Colorado Rapids have the ball. They pressed further up the field and with more numbers, and they were far more voracious in their counterattacking opportunities after they turned the Rapids over. And as Robin Fraser said after the game, there really wasn't much to say. The team was poor in terms of their possession. They knew they needed to be sharp on the ball, and they won 3 successive sequences, Mark, that saw the Colorado Rapids surrender 3 goals in a matter of just under 12 minutes. First, in the 60th minute, through Diego Fagundes, after a really unlucky bounce in which 3 Rapids players convened on Danny Hussens, and the bounce goes through, and Fagundes has a tap-in for the first goal in Verde history, and then a brace in 4 minutes in the 67th and 71st minute, respectively, from Cecilio Dominguez after some really good work on the side that saw Cole Bassett, you know, really undone. Diego Rubio being outside, you know, being, or not Diego Rubio, excuse me, Keegan Rosenberry being caught out of space and really a center back having to make a move that just leads an opportunity for Dominguez, and he buries his 2 opportunities. And then at that point, Mark, Austin FC chose to park the bus with just 20 minutes remaining, and it was a frustrating, lackluster attempt going forward. And unfortunately, Mark, this has mirrored a lot of what we saw from the Rapids last year and even going into the year before, where if they can't get grips onto a game that overall had been going well, once they get punched in the mouth, it kind of flies by them. And then the final 15 minutes are basically just the Rapids trying aimlessly, a lot of hero soccer, not a lot of link of play, being really frustrated, and Rapids fans ultimately leaving the game booing and unhappy as the opposing away section makes a lot of noise and is really, really happy. Normally, Mark, I'd start with, you know, good thing and our good thing, bad thing, big thing, but I guess I'll open it up. Would you prefer to start with bad thing? And if so, what are those bad things?
Well, there's only one bad thing from my mind, and I think what the Rapids really struggled with, and you said it well in your rundown, is ball possession. You know, a lot of the passes that they made were really clueless. There was a good pass to make, but you didn't make it, and now that moment has passed. There was a lot of those moments where the Rapids had an incisive, forward, line-breaking, challenging ball to play, and they chose not to play it. And I'm talking like, you know, when they were already down 2-1, when they were down 3-1, where they just, it looked like their brains short-circuited and the good passing and the good movement kind of went away in the final 30 minutes. You could even say in the final 45 minutes. So that was one big thing, but there was just a lot of sloppiness with passing. You know, a lot of passing behind the man, just a little bit off, you know, not in the right place. You know, the most egregious example of this was the second goal that Austin scored, where the Rapids played it out of the back, and then they circulated it to the left side. The left side circulated it back to the goalkeeper. The goalkeeper circulated it back to Danny Wilson or Keegan Rosenberry. I'm not sure. I think it was Rosenberry. And then Cole Bassett came in to help out Rosenberry, but Rosenberry's already too deep at that point, and the situation is desperate and dire. You have to ask questions about, you know, whether the center backs moved into the right place in that setup, of whether Yarbrough made a good choice in giving the ball to Keegan Rosenberry at that moment at all. You know, I don't fully blame Cole Bassett for that goal, because by the time the ball came to him, there was already an Austin player ready to pounce on him, and it was a bad set. But then he gets bullied off the ball, turns it over. Danny Wilson flops to the ground like a Magikarp from Pokemon. And way before he evolves into Giardos, which is what he was last week when he was the player of the game. I think that's what Magikarp evolves into, Matt.
That's what he evolves into. I thought it was Gyarados.
Gyarados, that's right. My son keeps correcting me on this. We're gonna talk about Pokemon pronunciation on a later podcast. That's our after hours podcast. But goal. And at that point, the game was, you know, effectively over, because the Rapids didn't mount much of a challenge after that. So, you know, if you're cleaner with your passing, you don't create a lot of those problems in the second half for yourself, and you probably get out of there with a win. Matt, what was your any other thoughts on bad thing, or do you want to switch over to good thing for, you know, your thoughts?
I mean, I've been harping on this, you know, I feel like going back to the playoff loss, the Rapids just emergency defending, either on an individual level or collective level, wasn't particularly good. I'll defend Danny Wilson as one of the lone members of Danny Wilson Island here, Mark. I think he makes a really, really good tackle on that play. I think Danny Hoosens was the one who had the ball, and the ball just happens to fall to Dominguez, and Dominguez curls it, you know, just inside the post on William Yarbrough. You know, if Jack Price is there, you know, to be able to pick up the ball and turn upfield, or at the very least Keegan Rosenberry's cut inside. Both the fullbacks were really, really narrow throughout this game, that I think was problematic, given they tried to play out wide and then they got stressed, and that just led to space that was a factor in all three goals that were created in kind of that Manchester City half space, Manchester City zone in the box that Joe Lowry and Jordan Angeli from MLS Assist really like to nerd out about, Mark. But just the emergency defending, this is a team that can, when they prevent mistakes, they don't give opportunities to the opponent. When they do a really good job of that, they're fine defensively. This is a team that cannot deal with compounded mistakes in terms of playing a ball into a bad area to where it's going to easily get turned over, that ball then getting turned over, and then somebody not making a critical defensive play to kind of prevent the chaos that is ensuing. And I think the thing that I'll point to, Mark, in looking back at it, the second wave of Austin players that are coming in that affect the play, whether it's Fagundes on the first goal, it was Dominguez on his two goals, and then I can't remember who it was, who I think it was Gallagher, who had the assist on the layoff on the second, or on the third goal to him, it was Rodney Reyes off the bench and everything. You know, that second and third midfielder into the box, into the danger area for Austin, arrives with Jack Price on his heels, and Eunice Nomley is nowhere in the camera angle that we have on the north side of DSG. So kind of that point, yes, there's bad emergency defending, Mark, but I can't tell you how many times I see to where there's been a quick counterattack in his time with the club, Jack Price, where there's a quick counterattack and it leads to a goal, and 2 or 3 seconds after the key sequence happens that leads to the goal, whether it's the shot or the pass before the goal, it's a second or two later that we see Jack Price actually enter the box, enter the frame. And so I just kind of have to wonder, you know, as the number six, as the captain, Jack Price does a number of really, really wonderful things that Jeff Lorenowitz couldn't do back in his day, that Michael Azira and Sam Cronin couldn't do back in their day. But the one thing that all those players that we could talk about, even going back to Marcelo Balboa and Steve Trischut, was they were defensively sound, and they were, you know, they were do not pass, go, do not get to my center backs as defensive midfielders. And in that regard, Mark, with, you know, I guess the big thing that I'll have that I'll lead into is, you know, I was having this conversation with a few people on Twitter afterwards. I think I quote tweeted something from you or somebody else, I can't remember. And basically just, Kellen's been fantastic. The last three competitive games that this team has played where he's had to be at left back. The playoff game last year and the first two regular season games this year. He has been as good as I would hope that Steven Betischer could be. as good as Sam Vine's 1v1 defending? Not necessarily. Going forward, good in link-up play or in crosses from once he actually gets super deep? Not necessarily, but overall pretty solid, has yet to make a key defensive mistake that has led to an opportunity for the opponent. I cannot say that of Danny Wilson, Lalas Abubakar, Austin Trusty now, or certainly Keegan Rosenberry. But then the key thing is, Mark, is that every single time that happens, the Rapids just get bulldozed in the midfield. Or at the very least, they can't put together a 90 minutes together where they hold it. And for some reason, where I would think Yunus Nnamdi as the Regista, almost the Luka Modric to Jack Price's Busquets, if I'm remembering my Real Madrid La Decima players winning back-to-back Champions League with Zizou correctly. It's just there's not that same tenacity. And for some reason, that issue isn't there with Kellen. And maybe Kellen Acosta doesn't put the team in situations that Nnamdi has, either as a 10 or as a number or as a deep-lying playmaker or anything. His defensive work rate, it is certainly better than Yunus Nnamdi's. And maybe he prevents those sequences from happening rather than actually, you know, correcting them once they actually do start and everything. But I guess the big thing that I have, Mark, is, you know, okay, question mark that maybe will end up being rhetorical for you. When was the last time that you can remember Kellen Acosta not starting in midfield for the Colorado Rapids, in which the Rapids won the battle in the middle of the park? And when was the last time that Kellen Acosta was there in which the Rapids were bulldozed in the middle of the park in the way that they were in the final 20 minutes against Dallas, certainly in the playoff game against Minnesota, and really from the second half on last Saturday?
I mean, you have to go back to like 2019 or 2018 when Acosta wasn't having a very good year and his role was unclear, in the sense that like he probably was playing more, advanced and, than he should have been. Or he was buried deep in a position where the team was kind of defending all the time. But to your point, Matt, like, you know, Acosta has been really, really good for over a year when he's been at the midfield. And to your point, he's been good at left back, too, although we'd like to see him move back to his natural position.
Yeah, so I think my thesis statement here for my big thing, Mark, is Kellen Acosta is a force multiplier as a number eight. He makes Cole Bassett better. He makes life easier for Jack Price. He makes life easier for the wide players, either the wingers tucking in to try and receive the ball in terms of being an outlet if he moves a little closer to one of the fullbacks. And I don't think there's another midfielder, including Yunus Nnamdi, including Cole Bassett, who can do that role as the more defensive of the number eights. And when while Kellen Acosta individually is not weak defensively, he doesn't make Danny Wilson better. He doesn't make life super easier for William Yarbrough relative to Sam Vines. So while he's a decent fill-in for Vines, the compounded benefit the team gets by Vines being there and me making the defense better, making the attack better, making life easier for other players, compounded with everything that I just said about Kellen Acosta, this is a completely different team, for my money, from a tactical and a shape standpoint. Mark, any other big thing? I guess we didn't technically do good things, so I guess I'll say the first half in possession was good as the possession was bad in the second half, and then again, the team being really, really dangerous on set pieces. Mark, we saw that in the game against FC Dallas. Danny Wilson had two really good opportunities. Wilson had another good chance, and so fitting that the first goal for the Colorado Rapids in 2021 was from a set piece, and Andre Shinyashiki getting it, given that he had a pretty rough season last year in terms of goal production and from restarts. Anything else that we want to say about this, Mark, or shall we look ahead to the Sunday?
Well, I have some things. I want to point out something I think fans get dramatic about early season wins and losses because we don't have a lot to compare it to. And I think also because the passing wasn't very good, we forget, and the turnovers, you know, resulted in an opposing goal in the final third. We kind of forget about the shooting or some of the offense that was generated. I think also, more importantly, your point about the first half was really important. We played a good first half of football, which is more than I can say for some of the previous years under previous coaches, where one good half of football would have been something we would have paid good money for. But I want to call listeners' attention to some of the advanced metrics here, and specifically looking at expected goals and specific shots that resulted in expected goals. So the expected goals number total for the Rapids was 1.31. And the expected goals total for Austin FC was 1.36. Meaning, this game was very close. And in a perfect world, Austin barely wins this by 1.36 to 1.31. Meaning, they created only slightly better chances than the Rapids. They finished, of course, they scored three goals. So they finished way above what they would expect. There were the two biggest plays of the game, Matt. This was, I think, really interesting. The two highest probability shots in the whole game occurred at the 74th minute and the 90th minute. One by the Rapids and one by Austin, right? The shot by the Rapids was John Lewis. You'll probably remember it. He was attacking diagonally from the right side, and he absolutely whistled the ball into the upper right-hand corner of the goal, and Austin's goalkeeper slapped it away with a rising hand. It was a really fantastic play. If you don't remember it, it's actually not in many of the highlights packages, which is dumb, because it had like a 0.27 goal probability, which is really, really high. And then the other one, it was also that his angle was really, really good. He was in a good scoring position. The other one was in that 90th minute, and I don't know who it was for Austin, but Austin attacked in a wide open breakaway, fed a ball into the middle of the field, and had nobody to stop them defensively. And William Yarbrough came out of goal and slide tackled the ball away. And that was another, that one was really ticketed for goal. I mean, the Rapids could have very easily lost this game 4-1. I don't know. I just think those are notable in that, like, you know, Jonathan Lewis, I think last year we also saw him being hard done over and over again. The kid deserves like a double digit goal scoring season. The kid probably deserves a starting spot, but he just hasn't actually produced. And so I think that that's a thing to kind of pay attention to and notice that, like, you know, there was a little bit of flukiness to this game, and the passing wasn't good. The Rapids can be better in possession. It shouldn't have been as close a game as it was. And also, even though on paper 3-1 doesn't look close, this was a close game.
A couple points there, Mark. First of all, just to fact check, because listeners, as you know, we are neurotic about getting the facts right. The Austin player with that opportunity in the 90th minute, Mark, was Rodney Reyes coming off the bench. I guess the point that I would make to your points about the lucky goals in the case of Austin, the two goals that Cecilio Dominguez scored in the 67th and the 71st minute each had an XG. One of them was, I'm going to use percentage points, folks, so then add two zeros, move the decimal 2 points to actually get the XG. One of them was 4.68%, Mark, and then the other one was 4.06. Add those two up together, that gets you to 8.74 percentage. And then there was an opportunity in the 11th minute, Mark, that Diego Rubio had. I think Cole Bassett laid it off to him at like the corner of the box, and he curled it over. It was a little bit of a tough angle, but it was the best opportunity of the opening 11 minutes. That had an XG of 8.9%. So that one opportunity that Diego Rubio had, or technically had a higher chance of scoring than the collective opportunities that Dominguez scored his brace on. And so kind of the point that I would make is, if we're believing the transfer market report of Cecilio Dominguez costing $3.3 million in a transfer fee, Mark, you know, those, so I will agree with you, Mark. At the same time, those were open opportunities with a decent sight line to a corner of the goal that would have been difficult for a Rapids defender or goalkeeper William Yarbrough to get to. But the point that I'm going to make here, Mark, of, you know, that's kind of a point that, going back to my original question of, can Diego Rubio score goals? Who's scoring goals for this team, given the plethora of opportunities that Michael Barrios had in the first half, none of which really panned out in everything, is the whole reason why you pay, you know, over $3 million in a transfer fee, and we don't know the salaries yet. I would assume Cecilio Domingo's probably getting paid more than Yudis Nomli, who's the highest paid player on the Rapids this year, is you pay for them to create those opportunities. Part of the greatness of Zlatan, Robbie Keane, David Villa, Carlos Smella mark. It's the fact that they take those low opportunity chances, or those chances that we would say an average MLS player would score a goal not quite 9% of the time with those two opportunities. You pay a guy to be one of the best guys to actually do that. So I'm going to ask the question to you, Mark. Those two same opportunities that Cecilio Dominguez has, does Rubio score on either or both of those?
Right.
You know, okay, yeah, you know, does, you know, okay, is there, Mark, is there any Rapids player who you think scores on both of those scenarios? And for the sake of completeness, we're going to say that Nomly and Barrios, who prefer to be on the right side, Dominguez was on the left side of the box shooting with his right foot. I'll allow you to switch it to mirror it to the point where it would be Barrios on his proper wing, and then Nomly also where he normally cuts inside and does his techer. So on their preferred foot, on their preferred side, whichever side it is there any individual Rapids player you would bet money right now to score both of those opportunities?
Not really. I mean, you know, Shinichiki took his chance, but it was a little bit fluky. I will say, I think one last thing we should probably mention is that third goal that went in, if you look at it carefully, there was a deflection there. It looked very much like the original shot was probably ticketed right for Yarbrough's hands. So, again, like, a little bit of flukiness. But, you know, you can't make mistakes to put yourself down, to draw a game even when you're when you've been outplaying your opponent 1-1. You can't make up mistakes that go 2-1. Like, you compound those mistakes over the course of a season, and you miss the playoffs. And so you hope they get they work the kinks out now, and they move on. But I think to your point, like, the thing is, we're probably going to say this all season, Matt. This is one of my fears, that the finishing, you know, our guys don't have a record of tremendous finishing. Worrying about whether we have a guy who's a guaranteed finisher is something we should probably save for a later podcast.
Yeah, and the simple fact is, and certainly over 50% of the games the Rapids are playing in, they will be playing a team that has a player who will be able to do that. Carlos Vela, Chicharito, if the first two games of his 2021 are to be believed, Raul Ruiz Diaz. The Rapids do not have that de facto decent opportunity, little bit of space, low XG, that guy finishes that opportunity, you know, the majority of the time that ultimately ends up deciding the game. The Rapids right now do not have that player. It's unlikely that anybody currently on the roster is going to become that. It's unlikely they will be signing somebody of that that will bring the quality that Dominguez brought on Saturday in the summer. Last thing I'll say, Mark, it was initially really unnerving for me to, like, have actual sounds and, like, you know, an ecosystem of people reacting and the oohs and ahs and the cheers that actually happened in the game. It was welcomed back, but certainly it was weird given all the games that I watched that were basically training matches in terms of the people on the bench being the loudest people that we actually had in DSG for a couple of the games last year. So I welcomed back the rest of the Burgundy and Blue community on Saturday. And it was wonderful and shocking to see the reverse canopsia that actually existed on that. And I look forward to that continuing, hopefully with a higher capacity and eventually the full 18,061 seats that are available for selling. And I think if that continues to be the case, Mark, then we're going to have more of a 12th man than certainly the Rapids had last year without any fans in attendance other than that first home game. Listeners, this coming Sunday, May 2nd, 2021, the Colorado Rapids will be heading to Rio Tinto Stadium, not for a Rocky Mountain Cup match, but to take on the Vancouver Whitecaps FC, who have temporarily relocated to Sandy, Utah. The Colorado Rapids currently find themselves in 11th in the Western Conference. They have one draw and one loss and no wins, with a -2 goal differential, their one road game, a draw against FC Dallas. The Vancouver Whitecaps, however, find themselves in 5th in the Western Conference. They have 4 points off of 2 games played, one win and one draw. The win took place against the Portland Timbers, who were a little bit depleted, Mark, since they had played CCL earlier. And then similarly, their 2-2 draw on this past weekend came at Toronto FC, who also had CCL to deal with. So Vancouver has the 4 points. They have a +1 goal differential. They are 1-0-0 at home, quotation marks, being Rio Tinto Stadium, and then obviously have just been one draw away. Some calamitous defending. I don't know if you saw that second goal that was scored by Toronto FC, Mark. So Vancouver's looking to clear the ball off the goal line after the ball comes in, and Maxime Crépeau bobbles it, Mark, and a Vancouver defender clears it with a no-look clearance, just spinning around. He ends up kicking his own, or he kicks the ball into his own teammate's face. The ball then bounces forward, and Jonathan Osorio has a wide-open net to tap it in. So certainly a calamitous defending that I think would make the Colorado Rapids of 2018 the we commit own goals and penalties and red cards backline would certainly have made them look good. Mark, the Vancouver Whitecaps are an interesting team that I haven't quite figured out and I'm still kind of think are actually bad. Lucas Cavallini is their main number nine, their attacking goal scorer, their big designated player. He's been recently paired up with Dejome. I'm not sure how to pronounce that, D-A-J-O-M-E with an accent on the A. So they're certainly a counter-attacking team in that regard. Russell Tybert and Baldissimo are the main creative players that you have that'll get out into space and try and do stuff on the ball in the midfield. And then the defense is very much a work in progress. Maxime Crépeau is a decent goalkeeper, but not super great. Andy Rose, who kind of played all over the place for the Seattle Sounders back in the day, has been the main center back for them. And they've got some interesting opportunities at interesting players at fullback in the form of Nowinski and then Gutierrez on the left. The Vancouver will certainly be there at their most dangerous for me, Mark, going down the left flank with Gutierrez overlapping with Russell Tybert and then having Lucas Cavallini certainly line up on that side. So making things difficult for Keegan Rosenberry, who will be looking to bounce back from his performance against Verde. Mark, I look at Mark Dos Santos and I see a guy who, yes, he was a good assistant with LAFC. I don't really think he's been given the resources to actually have a competent roster talent-wise in MLS, and this is on top of a guy, granted in 2020 with what it was, who was constantly manipulating what his lineup was. It wasn't always the same personnel. It was rarely the same formation or even just what they were doing. You know, I have a much better idea of first-year head coaches, Losada and Ainza, and DC United and in Atlanta United in terms of what they're going to look like than I did 2 weeks ago thinking about what are the Vancouver Whitecaps in terms of style, formation, tactics, and how they go about trying to exploit the opponent, create opportunities, and then also limit opponents against them. In that, this is kind of a wild card of an opponent. At the same time, this is a team who's gotten two good results, albeit with advantageous opponents. This is a team that is just now starting to get settled and used to altitude playing at Rio Tinto Stadium. They'll be at a disadvantage relative to the Rapids, Mark, who will have had what their third, fourth full week training at 5280 and everything. You know, this is a team that, you know, you limit Lucas Cavallini, you don't make mistakes in possession at the back, and you don't give Cavallini any space to actually operate in. Going forward, they should get opportunities on set pieces. They should be able to pick apart the opposing defense. If they finish their chances, they get result. If the Rapids play to the level that they were capable of, this should be a comfortable result for me, Mark. And if they play, if they do 90 minutes on Sunday the way that they did the first 45 minutes, I would predict them to win this game and have a good team performance that included good individual performances. I would even further double down on that if Lalas Abubakar is back at the back, maybe locking things down from a defensive emergency standpoint, and if Sam Vines is able to play on the left so that the Rapids can kind of mirror letting Vancouver have their right side of the flank and then taking advantage of that when they switch the ball to Sam Vines, on top of what I was talking about earlier with Kellen Acosta being a force multiplier for a midfield that can be had from a talent and a shape and a space standpoint. Mark, your thoughts on the Caps, your thoughts on this game, your thoughts on the Colorado Rapids taking on Salt Lake City Whitecaps FC.
What we don't know about the Whitecaps just is massive in the sense that I feel like they've had a lot of turnover. They only actually changed at six positions from last year to this year. Three transfers, two loan players, which is pretty uncommon these days in MLS to take a lot of guys on loan, and one draft pick. They're not signing a lot of academy players, or they haven't in a couple years. And then last year, they also had a lot more turnover. And that just means that this roster, other than Cavallini,
Tybert, who you mentioned, Andy Rose, who you mentioned, and Nerwinski, who you mentioned. There's just a ton of question marks here. You know, I don't know anything about DeJome, who you mentioned, although he scored a goal last week. You know, the midfield of Baldissimo and Bikel Figueiredo is going to be something interesting to watch. And you know, they rolled out roughly something like a 4-4-2 this past week that at times probably looked more like a 4-3-3. This is a, you know, a deceptively good team. I think they've been terrible in the past, and they've been tighter for the last year under Dos Santos. You know, they rose from the absolute bottom of the league to last year they finished, I think, 17th overall in MLS. So it's a classic trap game, Matthew, in the sense that we used to think that Vancouver was easy points and someone you should roll over. I don't think they are anymore. And now that we've lost Austin, we only picked up 1 point in the first week of the season against a Dallas team who we haven't mentioned. They got absolutely mollywalloped this week. They got pummeled, and they looked terrible. So those are some things that we can start to worry about a little bit, that we're not showing particularly well against mediocre teams. If Vancouver is yet another mediocre team, we probably shouldn't take them too lightly, even if we have in the past.
Yeah, I guess the one player who I didn't mention, Mark, who was maybe the one big acquisition that you had from the Whitecaps this past January was Dibert Caicedo. I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly. There's an accent on the first E in Dibert. He's a Colombian international, Mark, 21 years old, and previously was spending his time at Deportivo Cali, which is one of the big clubs there in Colombia these days. So, I mean, he's kind of the, you know, he's only been with the club since January 2021. So in that regard, he's a little bit of an unknown, but certainly moving in the same trajectory that we've seen of the Brian Galvans, the young, exciting, the Rodney Redises, the young, exciting Central South American talent and everything. So he'd be something to look at in the standpoint that he's unknown. But at the same time, I think, given that he wasn't signed, you know, as a big DP for multiple millions and millions of dollars, I would trust if Sam Vines is in there, he'd be able to handle things. And if it's Kellen Acosta in there, then maybe that just means that Kellen isn't going forward as much. But then, you know, as you said, with Vancouver playing with a back four, that just puts more onus on what the team's doing going forward, whether it's Nomley with his passing, Cole Bassett actually doing something, who hasn't done much offensively in these first two games, Mark. So, you know, to your point, I am far more concerned, or the area that I'm focused on, Mark, is what happens at, you know, 7:08, 7:10 p.m. on Sunday night when we get the actual lineup. Is Lalas Abubakar in there? Is Sam Vines in there? How does the rest of the team look and orient because of those two decisions, or because of those two players, and either their presence or their absence, their availability, if you will, is the not concern's not the right word, but that for me will give a much better indication of how the Rapids are going to play and whether or not they can get a result, rather than anything that I'm looking at from the Vancouver Whitecaps. Because for all we know, Mark, maybe Mark Dos Santos is completely changing things up to match the Rapids. At the same time, they're going to have, what, a week to actually prepare for that, when the Rapids at least have been building towards what they're trying to do from a system standpoint for the past 2 months. So I think in that, going off of the points that I made, you know, earlier in talking about Kellen Acosta's influence and what he means to the midfield and what having him at left back does to the team, I think the availability and the health of the Rapids will have a much bigger indication in the performance they'll be able to put forward than anything that I'm really concerned about, unless Danny Wilson decides that, you know, leaving Lucas Cavallini with 20 yards of space onside is a good decision. And in that, I think kind of similar to the Austin game, Mark, as much as we can talk about the finishing of Cecilio Dominguez, in a lot of ways, the wounds that led to the 3-1 loss for the Rapids were self-inflicted. And the Rapids, if the Rapids do not self-inflict wounds this coming Sunday, they should be expected to get a result. And maybe that, at the end of it, is the trap that that Admiral Abubakar should be worried about. Anything else that we want to say about this game at all, Mark? I guess we hinted that this was a should-win but also potential trap game. Do we want to give predictions?
You know, the team is not starting seasons well, and this is a trend that we keep seeing, and I don't quite understand it. I don't know if it's a fitness issue. I don't know if the fact that we didn't change a lot of players has created some weird anti-chemistry or something like that, some complacency. Look, all my friends are back in the locker room. Let's all get together and have a house party. I don't know. I don't get it. I feel like we have started the season flat. I don't see any reason why a road trip to Salt Lake City to play a Vancouver team that's young and hungry should change our fortunes. So I'm saying 1-1 draw. What do you think, Matt?
So I was on, Mark, we have a Last Word on Soccer has a Vancouver Whitecaps beat writer named Ben Rigetti. He does a podcast called the 90 Plus Podcast. I was on it last night, and it was released earlier today. I've scheduled out. I'll be tweeting about that this week, folks, if you want to, you know, take a peek into Know Thy Enemy, since obviously we won't be doing our own segment, Mark, because clearly us interviewing someone about the Vancouver Whitecaps leads to global pandemics and everything. But I indicated that I gave different predictions based on the availability. I think if both Vines and Abubakar start the game and go at least 60 minutes each, I think the Rapids win 2-1. If Vines is available, then and Lalas Abubakar is not, I think if one of them is available, regardless of who it is, I think it's a 1-1 draw, and I reserve the right to look at the line. If neither of them is available, I want to see both starting 11s and the shape and the formations before making a prediction. So again, maybe the big thing that I'm just looking at in this preview, as I'll reiterate now, is just the health of the Rapids is paramount in terms of them getting back on track for the whole of the season, and certainly in trying to get a result. I think Austin Trusty has done a job, but you know, just those little areas or little moments where he's just 5-10% worse than Lawless is certainly has added up, and is, you know, I'm banging this drum of, you know, just the difference between having Acosta in the midfield and what that does, and having Nomley further forward and Sam Vines out, you know, just compounds on the team in so many good ways, that having him not there and then having the midfield overrun and Kellen slightly out of position is just so problematic, especially, Mark, if we end up seeing that Caicedo ends up being, you know, a real talisman for Vancouver on Sunday night. We have an Ask HCHL, Mark. I'll read it now. It comes from Bill of the Four States Region. I'm not sure. That is a, I don't know what, is that the four, is that a Four Corners reference, Bill? In any case, the Twitter handle is at ECUALUNG. So Ekalung. Not sure about that. I apologize, Bill, if I'm pronouncing any of this correctly. Feel free to tweet at us and I will correct it for next time. But in any case, Mark, Bill asks us, here's an hashtag AskHHL for Rapids 96 podcast and soccer_rabbi. If Arsenal is purchased away from Kroenke, is there any reason to think it would lead to changes in the way the Rapids are viewed within the larger organization? The organization referring to Kroenke Sports Entertainment, KSE folks. More attention paid? ? Less? ? No difference? ? Mark? You know, Arsenal and North London has been full Kroenke out, and I think if there were any fans who were even on the fence or didn't think that Kroenke didn't have an impact on the team in his absence, in what he's been doing from a funding standpoint, I think the Kroenke's approval rating amongst Arsenal Twitter has never been lower, and I would be shocked if it was higher, if his approval rating was higher than 1 or 2% at this point. If indeed Kroenke out comes to fruition, Mark, what does that mean in terms of the Rapids' relevance to the Kroenke family, their pedigree, relevance, interaction within the KSE ecosystem, or what that could mean at all for the future of the Rapids at all?
I don't think Arsenal and Kroenke owning Arsenal has any impact on the Rapids. I think the Rams have more of an impact on the Rapids, because a question that got thrown to me a couple days ago on Twitter was, how come Victory Crossing never happened? Like, why is there a giant dirt patch on the west side of DSGP Field? And my sense is, Kroenke's a really good real estate development thinking sports owner, and that's the bizarrest statement I've ever made, because what the hell does that even mean? But, you know, if there was an opportunity for development, Kroenke would have taken it, and he didn't, probably because there wasn't money or investment or opportunity at the beginning. And right around the time that that part of Denver has started to grow up, an opportunity, it seems to be there. I think, to develop that parcel of land and that area around where there's nothing but, you know, dirt and prairie dogs, or what used to be prairie dogs before the plague. R.I.P. prairie dogs. We hardly knew you guys. You cute, furry little dudes. Pour one out, Matt. Pour one out for the prairie dogs. Anyways, you know, it would seem like they should have spent that money on developing there, but I think Kroenke got too busy with developing the land around Hollywood Park, which is where the Rams now play. They play on an old horse racing field that's being developed into a massive, you know, shopping mall, apartment complex, sports casino, all sorts of things, right? And when you drop like $2.5 billion on a parcel of land and build up a football team there, and then you hit a global pandemic, you know, you're not going to spend money on development and time. Anyways, that's my long-winded way of saying the Rapids aren't getting the attention. They're like the fifth or sixth most important team in the Kroenke franchise. The thing that's important for me to say is this. I think for the Rapids, the bigger challenge would come if Kroenke, or maybe the bigger opportunity realistically, would come if Kroenke unloads the Avs and the Nuggets. Because the synergies that those three teams have together, and synergy being a nifty business euphemism for the financial opportunities in only having a marketing team that can run stuff for all three teams, or the fact that you've got a television studio that does television production for all three of your major teams, and you can swing like one of your reporters between two different teams at two different seasons, and you can use the same sets, and you can use the same sound guys and the same video editors and Chiron developers and all this stuff. Like, you know, there's what are called in business economies of scale. If Kroenke decided to unload the Nuggets or the Avs, that would be a big problem for the Rapids, because I think or a big opportunity, because the Rapids would be probably unloaded in short order. The question right now, Matt, I think has to do, you know, predominantly with, and I think a lot of people on Twitter are talking about this right now, you know, the local American version of Kroenke being a skinflint and a terrible owner in regards to how, you know, Arsenal and Super League played out is the Comcast and Dish scenario here. That, like, the owner doesn't really care about the team, and it manifests in North America as, and so we can't watch our damn team on television. And that kind of audacity and that kind of disregard for the fans, that's what we saw with Arsenal and Super League from Kroenke, right? Money is the bottom line. We don't care about the fans. And, you know, I mean, you probably saw it, but Mark Kisla has a piece in the Denver Post today where he's calling out Kroenke for all three teams and the lack of spending. And he pivoted right off of this issue of the Super League. And, like, Kroenke's a bad owner. He cares about money. He cares about money to the point that he's myopic enough to think that screwing over the fans will not ultimately have a financial cost for him. And I think that that's been penny smart, pound foolish. Like, it's been harmful to his bottom line from day one, especially with the other teams. All right, that was a long answer. Matt, is there any oxygen that I haven't sucked out of the room with my long-winded and verbose explanation of why Stan Kroenke is the devil incarnate?
I think your point about the three teams here in Colorado, the Nuggets, the Avalanche, and the Rapids kind of being their own nucleus conjoined together, combined within the greater KSC infrastructure, the synergy around altitude sports and all the other things that interact with those three teams. I think that point is well taken. In that regard, I think it's pretty clear, saying this is someone who used to live in St. Louis, saying this is someone who is the son of an Angelino who was indoctrinated into Los Angeles Rams football just a few years ago when the team relocated back home, in the case of how my dad put it. You know, I think the Rams are are Kroenke's big toy and everything. Like, you're a billionaire in America. The thing that you want to own is an NFL team. I think in that regard, Arsenal is kind of its own independent junction. To that point, you know, Bill, I'd kind of respond. You know, Mark, we've talked in the past about the Arsenal-Rapids relationship and how there was supposed to be stuff on the tactical side and all of those things. And as far as I can tell, in the past decade, the two most significant things that have happened in terms of the interaction between those two football clubs has been Richard Fleming coming over from Arsenal TV, and then Pablo Mascherini, who at the time was the head coach of the Colorado Rapids, spending a week with Arsene Wenger, who then proceeded to go across town, or I guess across town in the same part of North London, to go spend a week with, at the time it was Pochettino, who was still managing at Tottenham Hotspur. So from the tactical...
Fran Taylor came over from the Rapids, from Arsenal's technical and video and stats team to the Rapids.
Okay, point taken. But I'm saying, Mark, I'm saying from a financial standpoint, Kroenke sees, you know, the conglomeration of the three Colorado teams effectively as one entity. The Rams, the NFL team, is a separate entity, and then clearly Arsenal Football Corporation, as he probably thinks about it, as a separate entity as well. So I think, you know, the only thing that I'd really have to add, Mark, I think to your point, the first signal that we could see a real change in what things look like for the Rapids would be if Kroenke was looking to move away from either the NHL or the NBA team. I think the more significant thing, and I feel like we talk about this every 6 months or so, is I think we could see significant movement in the form of, I don't think we'll see Kroenke think about selling the team until we get to the point where MLS is full, and then you've got a group of people potentially wanting to buy into some, into the single entity billionaires club, and then the opportunity won't be, oh, start a new team in a hot market and drop a bunch of money. It's buying an existing team and then maybe spruce it up a little bit. And then that's where Stan Kroenke's accountant and his financial people come in and say, hey, this has been our operating cost and what we've been losing every single year, vis-a-vis how much that asset has appreciated, you know, between the stadium and everything, this is how much you paid based on what the expansion fee was for the 32nd or whatever final expansion team that exists. You could get at least the expansion fee plus the value of all of the physical infrastructure assets that you have, the stadium, the pitch, and everything, and all of that. This is how much money you could make, and then that would be the big check that would make all the money, you know, the rounding error, the tax write-off that KSC has had from operating the Rapids at a loss and not funding it. That's where ka-ching, ka-ching, dollar signs, and Kroenke's like, okay, I'm willing to move away from that. In that regard, I think MLS deciding, if MLS came out right now, Mark, and said, you know, well, I guess Sacramento isn't happening. So if they came out right now and said, here's going to be our 30th team with Sacramento's bid coming up fall, and maybe it's Sacramento, maybe it's Phoenix, maybe it's somebody else, and that is the last team in MLS. As soon as that team kicks a ball in Major League Soccer in their own Soccer Pacific Stadium, then at that point, I think the floodgates open for KSC and a bunch of other ownership groups who've been sitting on this asset waiting for it to officially be a closed club where there's only so many seats at the table and there's not going to be new ones. And I think that message, that statement from Don Garber or the league as a whole, that will be a more significant inflection point in the relationship and Kroenke thinking about the future of the Rapids and his ownership of it than anything that happens with Arsenal or the Los Angeles Rams. I think there would have to be simultaneous things happening with both the Nuggets and the Avalanche to be as significant as the league deciding the door is closed, you want to get out on the table, you've got to buy a team like the Colorado Rapids. Mark, tell our dear listeners about Icarus FC and Roughneck Scarves.
Matt, we all know that the Super League folded last week, and one of the most amazing things about the Super League folding last week was that somehow they hadn't lined up a television sponsorship deal. They hadn't lined up any massive celebrity endorsements. They didn't even get the owners to talk in front of a camera about the new league. You know, they just issued a press release, and then they sent the head of Real Madrid onto a late night TV show. You know what probably would have saved the entire Super League if they had introduced it right off the bat?
Some custom scarves from Roughneck Scarves, or all of these Super League teams getting Super Boss new custom jerseys from Icarus FC.
You called it! And by the way, fans, we didn't even prepare that. I just started a riff off of that. I've been thinking about that for a couple days, and I went on to my Super League, you know, tangent, and Matt just absolutely picked up the beat, like,
Cole Bassett arriving late in the box to bang that sucker home right into the twine. Yeah, Icarus FC, Roughneck Scarves, they provide beautiful custom-made neckwear and jerseys for all kinds of purposes, and they probably could have saved the Super League if only the 12 owners had thought about it sooner. Matt, tell them where you can hit us up on the socials and on our email, and tell them about our latest upcoming holdingthehighline.substack.com release.
Mark, first of all, did you actually see like all the media stuff that Florentino Perez from Real Madrid was doing?
Embarrassing.
Yeah, like he had Emperor Palpatine in the Senate, we will combine into a new galactic empire energy, and it was cringy and terrible, and I'm like, dude, you're stop digging your own financial grave. The socios are gonna vote you out whenever that next election is. Listeners, follow us individually on Twitter at @soccer_rabbi and at @LWSMattPollard. Follow the podcast on the socials at Raptors96Podcast. Just like Bill, you can send us your questions using the hashtag AskHTHL and we will answer them on air. If you want to get in touch in more than 280 characters, Raptors96Podcast@gmail.com. If we bring further monetary value to your life, feel free to check out our Patreon page, patreon.com/Raptors96Podcast. Or become a Highliner through our Substack, holdingthehighline.substack.com, to get a lot of the exclusive content that Mark and I will be working on throughout the season and all the various nuanced and super nerdy segments of Backpass, or head on over to thedenverpost.com/HTHL for a really good deal on all of the digital sports content as the Nuggets and Avalanche round into form for their playoff runs, and then of course the Denver Broncos looking forward to all of their draft preview and then post-analysis and everything. Listeners, we will see you in the month of May, where hopefully the Colorado Rapids have picked up their first win of 2021.
Peace!